हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Srila Sanatana Goswami further explains that the Lord manifests a specific spiritual quality for the benefit of each living entity. Since there are innumerable living entities within the confines of the material creation, the Lord manifests infinite qualities. Thus, every conditioned soul can appreciate the Supreme Lord in a particular way. So everyone has a very specific quality that they appreciate in the Lord. Though they don't know it's the Lord, they take it that there's a value within the material world. So that can be appreciated within the Lord, because that's where the quality is from originally. Right? So this process of being able to see Krishna in everything is, then the quality is there. If we just see how Krishna is in everything, then that will be on the beginning stages of this. Right? Understanding Krishna from the Brahman platform, or coming up to the Paramatma, but the Bhagavan means that quality will remind you of Krishna himself and then his pastimes with the devotees, how he expresses that. Right? So there's a natural development. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that now that other processes have been rejected and bhakti accepted as the process to attain Bhagavan, the process of bhakti is described. Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim." The BBT purport states, Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. Right? So one just has to keep steady in Krishna consciousness. That's all that's necessary. If that's there, then one will get Krishna's mercy. That's the whole point. So that's the point. Is one who waits for Krishna to bestow his mercy, all the while being engaged in devotional service and tolerating here, patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds. So he understands, I'm getting these reactions because of doing things that aren't connected to Krishna. Right? Why do you get reactions for something you've done something for Krishna? You get for what you didn't do for Krishna. Right? In karma, it's just bad karma. Right? But in otherwise, then it's about that. Does that make sense? You had a question? A lot of klesha is there. Why is it said there's a lot of klesha? Where in the material world? Yes. Okay. But you're saying, why is there more klesha in the material world? Because of the lack of its connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? That's why it's more. Because on the material platform, then it's not being connected to Krishna, so therefore it doesn't have real substance. There's no real relationship. So all that will be noticed is the difficulty. Right? Let's say you have somebody who's doing an activity that may be difficult, but it's for pleasing someone else, and they want to please them. So the difficulties aren't really a trouble. They're just part of the process. But if they don't want to do this activity and don't like the person that they're having to work for, then it's only trouble. Right? So the material world, since it's not about the relationship of the jiva with the Lord, then it's just trouble. And not only that, it's you have all this trouble you go through, and then at the end of the body, it's gone. So the benefits you got from that work are gone, and you start again from zero. While in devotional service, then you perform it, it's connected to Krishna, it's nice, and it remains. So you just it just keeps building. Is that?
What is the reference to that verse?
The reference, this is 15:8. Okay. So 10:15:8.
So it is 14th chapter.
Why does it say 15 here?
It's a printing mistake.
It's a printing mistake. So we're moving fast, really quick. We went from the 13th straight to the 15th, right?
Title also, not killing of Brahma's prayers.
Yeah, it's the killing of Dinakara. Title?
Brahma's prayers to Lord Krishna is actually killing of Dinakasura. Yeah, 13 to 15. But it's chapter 14.
Yeah. Yes.
The content is correct.
Oh, so it should be Brahma's prayers or it should be the killing of Dinakasura?
Brahma's prayers.
So Dinakasura is the 15th chapter.
Yes.
So what happens when we get to the next chapter?
That's the next chapter.
We call that a next chapter. It is the next
chapter. Oh, okay. So from the next, it does say chapter 15, the killing of Dinakasura.
Yes.
Okay, so it's correct. So 10:14:8. Thank you. Otherwise. Okay, so that's the thing. Just somehow or another stick on in devotional service and everything will work out. As you there, then more and more one gets the Lord's mercy, so then things go easier and easier. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, if one lives such a simple life in devotional service, then automatically he inherits the transcendental abode of the Lord. Actually, every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and a son of the Godhead. Each has the natural right to inherit and share the transcendental pleasures of the Lord. But due to the contact of matter, conditioned living entities have been practically disinherited. If one adopts the simple method of engaging himself in devotional service, automatically he becomes eligible to be freed from material contamination and elevated to the transcendental position of associating with the Supreme Lord. Right, so this element of inheritance, it's not just that it's a nice analogy or that. That's actually what it's called, right? So, sampati das in Bhav Sadhana is called inheritance. That means when you come to that stage of actually now being, coming to the platform of prema, coming to the platform of being the Lord's associate, that's inherited. Otherwise, before that one, it's that Sarup Siddhi. So when it comes to Vastu Siddhi, that is then inheritance. Yes?
Through
the 13th. Yes, so from the 14th to the end, then Prabhupada's quotations will be from the Krishna book. Reference will be from the Krishna book, then we take from the BBT purports, and then as we were there, then, and, you know, by the other acharyas as they come up.
So, there also shouldn't be, should or should not be seen any distinction from the rest of the Bhagavatam because of the four parts of
Means the point is it's all Bhagavatam, it's all commentated on by the acharyas. And so then the BBT purport is taking the purports of the Acharyas and then trying to word them in a way in English that we'd understand. Right? Because the difficulty with English is it's how it's generally used, it's not grammatically based. It means we use the grammar to see that it's in proper order and stuff like that, but it's not that we discuss things based on grammar. But the Acharya in Sanskrit, you do. Like whenever Prabhupada says, this word is important, it's going because that's the subject in the verse. And so he's bringing out the detail, or if some other aspect, how it's written, what context it's written, is it active, passive, what kind of active or passive it is. Because in the Vedic, then, I think, can't remember what it is. Active, I think active has two forms or something, and passive has seven or something. Well, in the modern, they don't differentiate at all. So there's so much in grammar how you can prove points. Grammar is a logic. So much of the explanation is done through the logical presentation, as we were seeing in the Vedanta Sutra. There they get down to it, you know, discussing a word, pulling the word apart, showing it from different angles and all that. What are the derivatives and all that? So, and that's, they're just taking one word there. So here you're going on, you know, and there may be many aspects. So that kind of explanation doesn't work so well in English, and it generally doesn't work for those who are used to studying from the modern context. So then they've written the purports of the Acharyas in a way that it's more similar to how they've seen how Prabhupada will present in his purports. Does that make sense? So in that way, then, it's just carrying on the same position. And Prabhupada's written on the Krishna book anyway, so therefore we have his important comments, whatever they are, to be made anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah, so there's no need to distinguish that Bhagavatam goes up to 10:13 and after that we don't read it. No, we read Bhagavatam because Prabhupada wanted Prajumna to continue and finish the book. Right? And so it's authorized. Right? Yeah. Because it would be sad if we wouldn't read the chapters 14 to 90 of the BBT commentaries, but we're quite willing to read whatever's on Facebook. That would be intellectually very sad. You know what I'm saying? Our devotion and all that would take a a blow by this. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada, okay. Do we finish that one?
Comments on the nectar of devotion.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments in Nectar of Devotion. This statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all devotees. A devotee should not expect immediate relief from the reactions of his past misdeeds. No conditioned soul is free from such reactionary experiences, because material existence means continued suffering or enjoying of past activities. If one has finished his material activities, then there is no more birth. This is possible only when one begins Krishna conscious activities, because such activities do not produce reactions. So it means there's nothing in the future. Doesn't mean that we're not getting from the past. So we're going, no, but why am I still getting reactions? That's all coming from the past. The benefit of Krishna conscious means there'll be no more future births. So if there's no future births, there's no need of continuing reactions. So that there continues reactions in this lifetime, we shouldn't be surprised. We may not like it, but they're going to be happening anyway, so there's not anything you can do about that. And by Krishna's mercy, then much of the time we see they're reduced, but still something is there. Otherwise, we will think that it's heaven on earth and goodwill to all men, and we will go about enjoying our senses and forget about God. Yeah? Therefore, as soon as one becomes perfect in Krishna conscious activities, he is not going to take birth again in this material world. A devotee who is not perfectly freed from the resultant actions should therefore continue to act in Krishna consciousness seriously. even though there may be so many impediments. When such impediments arise, he should simply think of Krishna and expect his mercy. Right? So, even though the difficulties come up, we just continue doing our service. Because otherwise, if we don't, then what would be the reason for that? Right? Is our service based on material facilities? Did we have all those material facilities? Or, you know, was everything materially wonderful when we took up Krishna consciousness? No. So then, therefore, why should we expect it to be different? Right? We're in the material world. It wasn't nice then. And here's the solution. We can get out of the material world rather than, no, material world will become nice. If our idea is material world will become nice, then is that pure bhakti? Or is that mixed with karma? Right? We want devotional service and we want a beautiful material world. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Sometimes say that you just endeavor as much as it needs to make greater comfortable.
Means for ourselves personally. We only endeavor how much it takes to be comfortable. Yes. Comfortable says not uncomfortable means according to your conditioning what is just enough to make it work. You don't eat more. Just like, let's say, if your five chapatis works nicely, you don't eat six, you don't eat four. Because four, you'll be hungry. Six, then you'll be too full. So you eat five. You know, there's ten there, but that doesn't mean you take it. That's how the... That's the criminal mentality. If I can take it, why wouldn't I? Rather than how much I need is what I take. Right? So that's, yes, for that. But you continue doing service even though there is difficulty. Because it's the material world. You can't do anything about that. So, because we're interested in pure devotion, we're going to perform pure devotional activities despite the impediments of the material world.
Okay. Regarding karma or purification, you have that...
Karma or purification.
Or purification.
But what means, well, like...
I understand, or I used to understand that...
That's like saying, what's the difference between medicine and pills?
So my understanding was that karma is once you surrender to Krishna, then you have, I mean, Krishna's taking up your, I mean, it's taking you by the hand, or so to speak, and he's giving you the purification. I mean, still you have to pass through wherever you have to pass, but Krishna is...
Yes, but that's Krishna karma. Because what one has to remember in this is just like, let us say, you have a hardcore, total, absolute materialist. Okay? And he gets a fever. Okay? What medicine does he get? Okay? The specific medicine for that fever. Now, let's say you have he becomes a devotee, and he has that fever. What medicine does he take? Does it change? Like now, it's that how you say it? When you're a karmi, then if you have a fever, then you have to fast. And you have to take these, you know, nasty, bitter pills and drink tons of water, right? But once, when you become a devotee, when you get a fever, then you have to eat tons of strawberry cheesecake. And, you know, you don't have to bother about drinking water. And, you need no rest. You go out and work harder than before. You understand? The for the particular disease, the medicine's the same. So if someone is proud and they're a karmi, the medicine to cure that is the same as if you're a devotee and you're proud. It's the same medicine. The difference being, why we say in Krishna karma is, let us say, the karmi, he has performed, let's say, some false ego at, let's say, just for discussion's sake, at 100% ego. Right? Fully confident, fully, just what the success book said he should have, right? That full, 100% false ego. So, he's performed the activity, so what's going to be the reaction according to karma? 100%. Now, let us say, But now let us somehow or another, something happens, it humbles him. But he's a karmi. So he's done that work. The reaction still comes 100%. It doesn't change. You did the work, you get that. Just like you can say, but that's unfair. But also, let's say you have the guy born into the rich family. He doesn't do anything. In fact, all he does is spend money. But he's got tons of money. Does he deserve having that money? No, but he has it because in previous life he did the good work. So we always have to remember, if we want to cut on one side, we have to cut on the other side also. You know, we can't just pick and choose, right? The golden, you know, the golden goose here. Yeah, you know, so. But that's karma. Whatever you did, you will get the reaction. If it's good, you'll get it, even if you're a nonsense. And if you did nonsense, even if you're good, you'll get the reaction like that. It's just the way it works. That's karma. Otherwise, people, it's just like the puppy. You know, you don't chastise it every time for doing wrong. It'll think, well, maybe I can do it wrong. And they'll keep doing it that way. They'll never learn. Because there's a possibility. So in karma, you do this wrong, you'll always get the wrong for it. Okay? Now in devotional service, let us say he's done that 100% false ego. Right? So the reaction would be, but before that reaction comes up, let's say he has, something's come up and he's become more humble. So he's at 60% false ego. So the reaction, all he requires is at 60%. That's Krishna karma. Or, if somehow or another he's become very, very humble, then there's zero reaction. That's Krishna karma. Because it will look the same. That's why, in one sense, devotees are going to say, oh, it's my karma. Because it's from the reactions to when you were doing karma. But the reactions aren't controlled by karma. They're controlled by Krishna. That's why, if you want to be specific, it's Krishna karma. You can say, it's my karma. It's my Krishna karma. But his is the mundane three modes of nature karma, right? My karma is better than his karma. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. No conditioned soul is free from such reactionary experiences, because material existence means continued suffering or enjoying of past activities, right? So you might find that you have the liberated souls, they come down. So what they're getting is not reactions or anything to activities that they've done in the material world, right? Like that. Their reactions are coming, there is just to set example. That's what theirs is about. So it's different. Does that make sense? So they're short, because otherwise, if nothing happened to them, they'll go, okay, well, that's how it is, but we, you know, we had to go through all the suffering. How is it possible devotional service? So therefore, even though it's not reactions of karma, the difficulties they go through are worse than what we'll go through, even on a bad day. Take your worst bad hair day, is worse. You see the stories in the Bhagavad. Because otherwise, we would say, my situation is worse. So to avoid that, then they do. So there, it's either taking on reactions from the disciples or just, you know, how Krishna arranges it to set the example. Does that make sense? So that's not, it's not that Yudhishthira did something wrong, that's why he has his kingdom taken away. No, it just sets the example so that everybody else can see, despite whatever obstacles are there, you can be Krishna conscious. Despite family, despite relatives, despite the material situation, you can be Krishna conscious. Because even you have, okay, your two or three brothers are against you, but do you have 100 brothers against you? No. Who can claim they have 100 brothers that are against them? Does that make sense? And yes, they've turned against you now, but they've always been against you. And this is now Krishna's 125, right? At the Battle of Kurukshetra, that means Arjuna's 125. You know, because they're equals, like that. So Bhima is, I think 2 years ahead of Arjuna. And then Yudhishthira's 1 year ahead of that. So Yudhishthira's 128. And he was born before Duryodhana. So Duryodhana and Bhima are equals. That's why they have such rivalry. So that means, you know, how you say? Basically, you can say that's 127 years of 100 brothers not liking it. But no one can claim that, yes, it's that bad. Yes, you know, we were all together in one thing, you know, and then they took all the property, so I lost, you know, emperorship over the whole planet, all seven seas, all seven continents. Can anybody say that? No, no one can say that. Right? Alexander can't say that, Caesar can't say that, Napoleon can't say that, like that. Louis, he can say that, but it's not true. But he's the Sun King, yeah, come on. So, you understand? So no one can claim. So no one has as difficult as time. So that's why the examples are like this. Yes?
How true is it that sometimes it seems that when you try to preach, the karmic connection seems to come up more?
It could be they're coming up more. It could be just you're more aware of it. Or it could be when you're sitting on your couch, there's how many obstacles could there be? You know what I'm saying? You go to the refrigerator and somebody drank all the water and only left that half centimeter in the bottom so they didn't have to refill it. That's the major setbacks. You know what I'm saying? And so once you start to do something, then you see that there's... You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. You're sitting on your couch. Do the karmis really care? Are you a threat? No. But you go out and start preaching, now... What does it matter? No, but what does it matter? Because how you're going to deal with it is exactly the same. Right? You're driving down the street and you thought you're going to take the, you know, you were very busy, so you're going to take the shortcut. And in that way, it only will take 20 minutes to get to where you're going. But as you go that way, then you find that they're doing road work, the road's blocked, and you have to go around, so it's a 40-minute drive. So whether it's karma, whether it's being imposed on you from outside so unfairly, you know, what's the solution? The 40-minute drive. You know, unless you have that funny little red button on chitty chitty bang bang, and then, you know, why 20 minutes? You don't, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah.
We don't think about it, but we don't think about it.
The whole point is if you can think about that if you want, but then are you thinking about Krishna? No, so that's your choice. Do you want to think about Krishna, or do you want to think about this? It means thinking how to deal with it. What's the reasons it comes up? So how can I improve my characters? Because you want to improve the character that you can deal with it, not I'll improve my character so it goes away. That you have no control over. Do we control the three modes of nature? No. Even the, you know, Twilight Zone didn't claim that. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore you are limited by what you're dealing with. You can simply control your reaction to it by improving the qualities that you work with. Instead of intolerance, now you work with more tolerance. You know, like this. You understand? So that way then you can improve your devotional service. So its only importance on why it is what it is if there's an anarta there that therefore needs to be addressed. And an address doesn't mean that you make an effort to get rid of it. You make an effort to be engaged in Krishna's service so that that doesn't come up. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, we're taking the positive. If you're doing the positive, the negative's taken care of. If you're always remembering Krishna, you're not forgetting it. But if you simply think, I shouldn't forget Krishna, but not thinking about remembering Krishna, it won't work. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. A devotee who is not perfectly free from the resultant actions should therefore continue to act in Krishna consciousness seriously, even though there may be so many impediments. When such impediments arise, you should simply think of Krishna and expect his mercy. That is the only solace. And the mercy will come when Krishna likes, not when we say it should come. Right? We don't sit there and go, you know, is the mercy coming yet? Is the mercy coming yet? No, no, you have to wait. You have to be patient. Okay. Is the mercy coming yet? No, we don't do that. Okay? If the devotee passes his days in that spirit, it is certain that he is going to be promoted to the abode of the Lord. So that's the mood, that's the spirit. We see is that it's always about this, the spirit. Is that you have that attitude, that's what makes everything work. Because when you're dealing with Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan, you have to start with Sambandha, and the Sambandha is the right attitude. Then the knowledge, the application, the results then come very easily. But if the attitude's not right, it doesn't matter what we're doing. No, but I'm doing everything right. Yes, you're doing everything right, but your attitude's wrong. Right? So there'll be no change in your perception. You change the perception so that the attitude's right, even if everything's wrong, it doesn't bother you. If you're in a good mood, bad things don't bother you. But if you're in a bad mood, even good things bother you. You know, why are they so happy? Yes?
It's like before, some time ago, we discussed with the president of the country, and he said, the most people, he has met 15 different presidents in Europe, just as I'm from the region. And he said, the most important thing of all, anything, societies, anything, is attitude.
Attitude, yes. Yeah, very good. Very good. See? Like that, because that's the whole thing. If the attitude's right, it's just like, yes. So here we see is that, you know, the world leaders see that. Even the big business guys see it. I mean, you have so many people come in, you have 100 people come for the interview. Who do you pick? Because they all have the same resume. You pick the one with the best attitude. Okay? That's the whole thing. It's all about attitude. That's why in the modern thing of pushing everything on knowledge and skills, and that's going to make everything perfect. It will never work. Never. You know? Because it'll just keep changing. Knowledge and skills, right? Before it was, for some time, devotees taught Carnegie. Then it soon turns into Covey. Like that. You know, C to C, you know. From C to Chinese. Yeah. And then, after that, then we went to?
Secret.
Huh? Oh, yes, the secret. Have you been to the secret? Yes, and then underlying that, then we had the strategic planning is there. Then I think last year it was systems, you know, like that. And I heard that just now they're talking Devono. You know, hats. Right? Six hats? No? You know? You don't know. Okay. Well, that's quite old. Devono goes back quite a ways. You know, efficient, but, you know, whatever. So, and it'll just keep changing. So knowledge and skills is not the thing that's doing it. It's attitude. So now if you have the right attitude, then whatever knowledge and skills you use, it'll work better. The point is any one of these can work if the attitude's right, and none of them will work if you don't have the right attitude. So that's the bottom line, is if the attitude's not good, nothing works. So that's why he says, Prabhupada said, with sincerity, right? Where was it? A devotee who is not perfectly freed from the resultant reaction should therefore continue to act in Krishna consciousness seriously. Right? So again, back to the qualities, back to the attitude. Then that seriously, then he will get solace and then it will certainly work. You understand? So that's where the key is. Because otherwise, as far as knowledge goes, There are Hindu pundits that know so much knowledge of the Vedic literature, it's not funny. And they're walking encyclopedias literally, but they're not devotees. They can't understand Krishna. And Brahma, who's more of a Brahmin than Brahma? He's the, you know, Adi Brahmana, right? And he can't understand. So it's only by Krishna's mercy. Yes? No? Yes.
Can you explain what's like the relationship between the kind of a, you could say, by presenting things, sincerity, emotion, and the expertise of the kids. Just
sincerity, emotion, and expertise.
Yeah, but just some time ago, some.
Because you have to combine those three.
Yeah.
Because the sincerity means the attitude. The expertise means the knowledge and skills. And the emotion means what the result is. Because all results, then there's going to be an experience. So if you combine all those three together in practical application, that's what we're talking about. So that means it must be, how you say, the attitude of servant of Krishna, the emotion that one wants to please Krishna, that knowledge of what is given by Guru and Krishna in the Shastras, all that combined together, is that's proper Abhideya. That will get you a real prayojan or pleasure of Krishna. So you have to have all three. It's not one of all. But of that, if you start with the right attitude, you can get the other two to be correct. Right? Means it doesn't mean that when we say you have to have the right attitude, doesn't mean that we don't need knowledge. What I'm talking about is the idea that just by having knowledge, and we're just taking it for granted that we already have the right attitude, that if we already have the right attitude, then why isn't there progress? You know what I'm saying? Of course there's some progress. We're doing devotional service, there's always progress. But the dynamic progress that we say by this knowledge will give us, it won't, because as we're saying, you know, 20 years and we're just using all these systems and they're not working, including systems. So that's the whole point. This attitude makes it work. So it's not that, oh, this is the new thing, it's the understanding of service to Krishna. If I see I'm servant of Krishna, therefore Krishna has given everything. Therefore it means in the Shastras, and the Shastras that are given to us by the Acharyas. So, therefore whatever I'm looking for is within Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So with that proper attitude, now if I study, then I can see things. But if I think it's no, that this karmi's worked out stuff and he's so successful, yeah, that's the point. Only he's successful. Otherwise, have you ever heard of some book comes out, you know, it's bestseller, you know, bestseller is read by, I don't know how many millions, but a lot of millions. And so now suddenly then Forbes is putting out a thing how suddenly now, you know, within, you know, 6 months of this book coming out, now there's hundreds of, you know, or tens of millions of people now who have moved up and they're all millionaires and the market's really happening and wow, what a dynamic book, and this guy should get the, you know, Nobel Prize for something, you know. Have you ever heard of that? Never. Because the only one that's being successful from that is him. And the persons that he observed to understand it. So nothing changed, except the book was written and he became more successful. And we became less because now we think we know what we're doing and we spent our money, which he has. Right? So, yes, we've helped the economy, but we didn't get any benefit from that economy boost because that extra yacht, we don't get to use it. Does that make sense? Yes.
A couple of years ago, you mentioned this about the secret and other things. You said that the only success of the success guru is that he has sold you that book.
Yes. Like that. He knows how to sell you the book, and that's there. Otherwise, why would he be doing that? Right? But he's applying that into selling the book. So in other words, you can see they're selling books, they're doing that, so they're more intellectual. They're not actually business persons. And so they probably are able to have the karma that they can have somebody do that for them, and therefore they're very rich. So they have that brahminical attitude, therefore it works. So we can see it's they have an attitude. Then from that attitude they have the science, but the other people don't have the attitude, therefore they can't understand the science. Okay. And because they don't have devotion, then these gurus, they can't actually understand the context of which it fits. Because Krishna is knowledge, so they don't actually understand it. They get a glimmer according to their karma. So only a devotee can actually understand. Does that make sense? I think it was, I'm not sure, but from what I remember, Napoleon, you know, he was good, but he only slept 2 hours a day. Right? We don't hear Yudhishthir sleeping only two hours a day. Right? So, and he was managing the whole world. So that means he must know more and deeper. Right? So these persons catch a glimpse and they get so much success. So let alone if they catch more of the proper picture. And then who knows it the best? Krishna. He just desires it happens. You know, if we just desire, does anything happen? You know, the world would be perfect before we got out of bed, right? In fact, we wouldn't even have to get out of bed. Okay. By such activities, he earns his claim to enter into the kingdom of God. Right? So by that proper attitude, by that proper endeavor, then he comes, that consistent endeavor, then comes to the platform of inheriting the kingdom of God. Okay. The exact word used in this verse is dayabak. Dayabak refers to a son's becoming the lawful inheritor of the property of the father. In a similar way, a pure devotee who is prepared to undergo all kinds of tribulations in executing Krishna conscious duties becomes lawfully qualified to enter into the transcendental abode. Right? It's just naturally how it goes. Right? Does that make sense? Something's coming, but very slow. Lord Brahma continued, "My dear Lord, just see my uncivilized impudence. To test your power, I tried to extend my illusory potency to cover you, the unlimited and primeval supersoul, who bewilder even the masters of illusion. What am I compared to you? I am just like a small spark in the presence of a great fire." Oh, must be a JCB. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur elaborates, "Brahma speaks this verse to express his repentance, thinking that rather than perform devotional activities, he has simply committed great offense to Krishna. The word Arya means a worthy person or one with wisdom. In this verse, Brahma refers to himself as Anaryam, one with contemptible behavior or uncivilized impudence." Right? So in this case, yeah, Arya means a worthy person, means one who follows the scriptures, who has that proper knowledge and proper behavior. And someone who doesn't, who behaves in a contemptible fashion without the qualities, that's anarya. Calling themselves Anaryans instead of Aryans. The Prussian group known as the SS. Sorry?
Because they killed them?
No, I'm saying is that they always prided themselves in being the Aryan culture. But actually we find here that they're the un-Aryan culture. Okay, Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, coming to his senses, Lord Brahma saw that although he was a very powerful living creature in the estimation of all other living creatures within this material world, his power was nothing in comparison to the power and energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The scientists of the material world have invented wonders such as atomic weapons, and when tested in a city or some insignificant place on this earth, such powerful weapons create so-called havoc. But if the atomic weapons are tested on the sun, what is their significance? Right? I can't remember. Is that they? We just had some time back some big flares on the sun, like that. And I can't remember how many. It's either thousands or tens of thousands or millions of atomic bombs they compare it to. You know? Anyone knows? Something ridiculous when you get a solar flare. Like that. So Prabhupada's point is you're testing it here and it looks like it does a lot, but if you test it on the sun, what would it do? Nothing. Right? Similarly, Brahma's stealing of the calves and cows from Sri Krishna may be a wonderful display of mystic power, but when Sri Krishna exhibited his expansive power in so many calves and boys and maintained them without effort, Brahma could understand that his own power was insignificant. Lord Brahma continued, therefore, O infallible Lord, kindly excuse my offenses. I have taken birth in the mode of passion, and am therefore simply foolish, presuming myself a controller independent of your lordship. My eyes are blinded by the darkness of ignorance, which causes me to think of myself as the unborn creator of the universe. But please consider that I am your servant, and therefore worthy of your compassion. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that to this previous verse, Lord Krishna considers, this Brahma is worthy of my mercy, because although he shows himself as master elsewhere, towards me he is a servant, Nathavan. In his Bhagavat Sandarbha Anucheda 33-39, Srila Jiva Goswami cites verses 11-12 in order to authoritatively establish that the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is simultaneously limited within space and yet all-pervading. So he's pointing out, because he says, all-infallible Lord. Right? Even though he's unlimited, he's still within a space. That's the inconceivable potency of his power. Because right? It's all his energy, so it's all him. He can appear wherever he likes, however he likes. Lord Brahma continued, what am I, a small creature measuring seven spans of my own hand? I am enclosed in a pot-like universe composed of material nature, the total material energy, false ego, ether, air, fire, water, and earth. So seven coverings, right? Earth, water, fire, air, ether, then false ego, and the total material energy. And what is your glory? Unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body, just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screen window. Footnote 27. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 11 to Bhagavad Arkramichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book.
Why this Prayojana section not Sambandha?
Why is it Prayojana, not Sambandha? Because the point is, this is about his glory. It's about how has this happened? How is it Brahma? How is Brahma the secondary creator within the pot-like universe, and Krishna has unlimited universes coming from his pores? Why is that happening?
Because Krishna is
the source of everything. But why is Krishna being the source in this way? Being the source means he could produce anything. Why is he producing unlimited universes with unlimited Brahmas stuck inside of each one.
So that Brahma can serve.
So that Brahma can serve. And why would Krishna want Brahma to serve?
Someone in charge of the material universe.
There should be?
Someone in charge.
There should be someone in charge. So, because of the ultimate principle of someone in charge, the Uma principle, then we have, therefore Krishna had to arrange, right? All these universes are there. Who's going to manage them? So, therefore, he had to put a Brahma inside each one of them. Right? And so he's there, there's the lotus is there. In a small universe, okay, four-headed Brahma, he looks cool, but in these bigger universes, like, it's kind of too much of a gap. So what to fill him up with? So, you know, better more heads, you know, a regular body and more heads than a huge body and little pinhead. Right? So therefore, then he made him with more heads, like that. So what are we missing here?
That is what I'm asking you.
Oh, that's what you're asking. Okay. Krishna's satisfaction. It's Krishna's pleasure that he does the material creation. So that's what we're bringing out here. Because he's already gone beyond the material and then bhakti. So it's all that Krishna, he doesn't have to do this. He doesn't have to herd cows. He doesn't have to have an occupation. He doesn't have to maintain. He's just doing it out of his own pleasure. That's the priority. This is another aspect of his affection for the living entities. Yeah? So that's why we take it. Point is because it's all one, there's a non-difference between it all. Right? It's just like you have a chaturvyuha, okay? But they can be categorized into how many categories?
Four.
There are already four. But they can be categorized into?
The permutation and combination manner.
That's going down. I'm talking about going up.
Yeah.
That's too far up. One. How are you taking one? What is the one? Oh, you're going to take from Mahanarayan, but then you have to take from Mahanarayan, it goes back to Balaram, from Balaram back. So the whole point is but all those four features are in Krishna.
Yes.
Yeah. How about, let's try a different approach, okay? We have the Chaturvyuha, right? Sankarshan, Prajumna, Adiwir, and Vasudeva. And generally when we use it as an explanation for understanding things that are going on in the philosophy or pastimes, we refer it back to which formula? You're not getting the question. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Right? Yeah. Okay, so four goes into three.
Yeah.
And the three is actually two. You have the masculine and the feminine, or Krishna and his energy.
Yes.
So Krishna is the existence, and the ananda aspect, or the experience aspect, are his energies. So it's simply that when these two interact, that's how you get three. Right? So technically there's two. But if it's two without interacting, then technically you have one, because Krishna's energies are non-different. So therefore, then why does Krishna expand, since he's already everything and he's already, you know, perfectly happy? Right? To be more perfectly happy. Right? So he expands his energies. So then you have the two. But without interacting, then it's the same as one. So therefore, then there's the three. Does that make sense? So they're non-different, but they're different. So yes, everything's sambandha, that Krishna is enjoying the rasa dance and the love the gopis have for Krishna. But you could also say, well, that's sambandha, that they're in the rasa dance and it happens to be this here and that there, and they're on the sands of the Jamuna. And, but you know what I'm saying? So you see what are the acharyas bringing out. So they're bringing out what is the actual thing happening. Not that it can't be used in other ways, but in this case it's being used there. It's not that that verse doesn't come in another place in some other aspect.
It does come.
Yes, but the point is that it's been brought out in this case to bring out that aspect. Because we see even in the Sandarbhas, Jiva Goswami will take one verse and quote it in many, many ways, even with one in one Anucheda. And then it will come up in the next Anucheda as a different thing. So that means the one verse can be used in many ways. So he's pointing out here that aspect of love that Krishna has between himself and the devotees. Does that make sense? Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.